Okay, so this time we will be chazering the Drushas Haran, Drush number 4. Next time we will go on to Drush number 5. Okay, so the Ran started off the Drusha with the Pasuk in the end of Mishpatim that it says, Vayal Moshe al it's Perek Chavdal Pasuk Tezayin. Vayishkun Kvar Hashem al Har Sinai, Vayichaseir Anan Shal Shis Yamim. It says, Hashem Shechina rested on Har Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. Vayikra Moshe, Hashem called to Moshe, Vayom Hashvi Mitoch Anan, on the seventh day from the cloud. So Chazal disagree, have a machlokas about what did the cloud cover. It says God's Shechina rested on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days, and God called to Moshe. So the one version is that that the cloud covered the mountain, which is the Pashup Shot. It says that God's Shechina rested on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. It sounds like the cloud covered Mount Sinai, Har Sinai. The other version is that the cloud covered Moshe. In other words, it says, Vayichaseir Anan Sheshes Yama Mikra Moshe, the cloud covered it 6 days, and Hashem called to Moshe, means the cloud covered Moshe. Okay, so if it means, like the first way, that the cloud covered Mount Sinai, Har Sinai, that means before Hashem gave the Torah, His Shechina came down, the cloud covered Har Sinai, that was before the Torah was given. If, however, it means the cloud covered Moshe, this would be after the Torah was given, after Aseres HaDibros, so then the cloud covered Moshe, because Moshe had to prepare for 6 days before he went up to Har Sinai to get the rest of the Torah. What's the difference? According to the second version, we have a source for the following halacha. There's a halacha that the Kohen Gadol, this is from the first Mishnah in Yuma, that the Kohen Gadol has to separate himself 7 days prior to his avoda in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Has to separate himself. Also, the Kohen who burns the Paradum also has to separate himself before he does that avoda. Where do we learn this from? How do we know a Kohen Gadol has to separate himself 7 days before doing the avoda on Yom Kippur, the service on Yom Kippur? So one of the sources is this pasuk that we see Moshe, before he went up to Har Sinai to get the Torah, he separated himself 6 days before he went up. So too, the Kohen Gadol, before he goes into the Kodesh Kadoshim, has to separate himself to get ready for the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so the Ran asked two questions. Number one, how on earth can you learn from Moshe going up to heaven that Kohen Gadol has to prepare himself before going into Kodesh Kadoshim? Yes, it's true, the Kohen Gadol doing the Avoda in the Kodesh Kadoshim is a very holy thing, but it does not compare to Moshe going up to the heavens. Moshe going up to Shemayim to get the Torah, that was the holiest thing that ever happened in history. So just because Moshe needed 6 days of preparation for that does not tell us necessarily that the Kohen Gadol needs to prepare himself before going into the Kodesh Kadoshim. It's very holy, true, but you can't learn from something that's far holier. Secondly, even if we'll say, well, whatever, we're just learning the idea that you see that before you do something holy, you should prepare yourself. So too, the Kohen Gadol, before he walks into the Kodesh Kadoshim, he should also prepare himself. So if that's true, says the Ran, so why Moshe himself before the Aseres HaDibros? We said Moshe had to prepare himself before, after the Aseres HaDibros, before going up for the rest of the 40 days. So why is it that he didn't have to prepare himself before the Aseres HaDibros themselves? Why didn't he need to have 7 days of preparation before the Aseres HaDibros themselves? Okay, the Ran answers both questions with one answer. The answer is that Moshe didn't need to separate himself at all. This had nothing to do with Moshe. The whole point of Moshe separating himself before he went up to get for the 40 days was to show us, later generations, that before we do something very holy, we need to separate ourselves for a period. And why, says the Ran, did Moshe not need it? Who says Moshe didn't need it? So that's what the Ran says, that Moshe was a little bit different. And in other words, before a person does something very holy, the reason why you need to separate yourself is because we're all human, and we have good days, we have bad days, we have some days where we're more good about stuff, and we're more spiritual, and other days where we're overtired, and things don't go as well, and we get caught up in life, and you know, so before you do something super holy, like walk into the Kodesh Kodeshim, you need to take a step back, remove yourself from your life, get back into the swing of things, get ready for the awesome holy moment. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't need that. He was always on. And that, says the Ran, was a miracle. Hashem made a miracle that even though most humans, all humans, are brought down by their bodies change their moods and things, Hashem made a nace that Moshe didn't have that problem. He was not held back by his body, and he was always on. And that's why we know, right, he couldn't stay married to Tzipora, and Miriam said, why not? I'm a Navi, you're a Navi. We have Navim that are still married. And Hashem said, Moshe is different, because Moshe can get Navua at any time. Moshe was on a much higher level, and that's why the Ran says, the Pasuk tells us that there will never be a Navi like Moshe ever again. So the Ran asked, why would Hashem say that? Maybe let people try. Maybe people can try. So the Ran answer is that because Hashem, it wasn't possible to reach the level of Nevuah Moshe reached. Hashem had to make a miracle for him to reach that level. And Hashem's not going to make that miracle ever again, because the whole reason why Hashem made a miracle to make Moshe reach higher levels than is humanly possible is because that we got the Torah through Moshe. Hashem wanted it established that Moshe was the Navi of God. But in general, it was a nace, and this miracle was that Moshe would always be on this high level, and that's why Moshe didn't need preparation before going up to Har Sinai. It was just to teach us that we need preparation before holy things. Okay, so now the Ran says the way this works is, and this is the part that he's going to explain now in great detail, the way it works is that normally when you're, if you want to get something, some shefa, some flow of nevuah or something good from heaven, if it's coming through some spiritual network, so then you have to be able to fit in that program. In other words, if your nevuah is coming through, I guess, a malach or something like that, from Hashem to through a malach or in some way like that, so you have to be a tzaddik and in the right frame of mind and perfect. But when you're getting it straight from Hashem, like Moshe got panim upanim, so you can never be perfectly aligned with Hashem. That's impossible. So it always has to be a miracle. So with Moshe, he made a bigger miracle to make him always able to get Nevuah and that high level. Okay, but that whole concept obviously needs a lot of explanation. He's going to explain it a little bit more. And the way he does that is through the story of the angel. There's a story, as we know, Hashem says he's going to send a malach to the Jews to guide them in the desert. And the first time he tells them that is in Mishpatim. The second time he tells them that is after Chet Egel and Parshas Kisisa, that he's going to send a malach. And there, not in Mishpatim, there in Kisisa, Bnei Yisrael seem to be very upset about this. And they complain, and Moshe says, please, Al Taleinu Mizeh, don't leave us, we need you with us. And then the malach goes away, and then he comes back, and the time of Yoshua meets the malach, the same malach later on in history, that he's going to go help the Jews conquer at that time. Okay, so there's a lot of questions with that story. So let's start in the Psukim in Mishpatim, and this is in Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Chaf and Chaf Aleph. Hashem says, I'm going to send an angel to you to protect you in the desert and to conquer lands for you. And Hashem says, He shomer mi panav, be careful, Ushma bekolo, al tamer bo, listen to what he says, don't rebel against him, ki lo yisel fish achem, because he will not forgive you, kishmi brikabo, because my name is in him. Rather, listen to what he says, and then he will destroy your enemies. Okay, so the Ran says, this begs obvious question. What is the point of sending a malach if he'll not forgive us? Why is Hashem himself not leading the Jewish people? Presumably because if they sinned, they'd be wiped out. Chas v'shalom. So what's the point if the malach, if you're telling me don't not listen to the malach because he can't forgive you, so then what's the point of sending him? So then let Hashem himself come. Furthermore, why do we need a malach to forgive us? Don't we need Hashem to forgive us? Why is the malach forgiving us? Okay, so the Ran answers that what this means is it's not that the malach is going to forgive us. We don't need the malach's forgiveness. We need Hashem's forgiveness. But the point is that, like you said before, for you to get spiritual stuff from a koach in Shemayim, if a malach is supposed to do something good for you, and you're supposed to get something from a malach, malachim are like, in a sense, lahavdil, computer programs. They follow, they have a shlichus, they have a mission to be sent by Hashem to do X. So you have to fit all the criteria for the program to work. So if the malach is sent to save the righteous Jews from the Amorim, and if the righteous Jews aren't righteous anymore, so then the program doesn't fit, and he can't help you. You can't align with him. Similarly, just like if you imagine if the malach was sent on a mission to help the Jews conquer the Amori, and instead of attacking the Amori, the Jews decide, oh, we're going to attack the Prizi. So they didn't listen to the malach, let's say. The malach said, go attack the Amori. Hashem says to go attack the Amori, and the Jews attack the Prizi. So it's not a matter of the malach can't forgive you in the, being gracious about it sense. The malach can't forgive in the sense he can't work in, and he only has one program. If you don't follow the program, he's not a human. He doesn't have the ability to change. No, there's no flexibility. He's given a mission. If you don't fit the mission, it's not a punishment that he can't help you. He can't help you because he can't help you. So that's what it means. It doesn't mean that he won't forgive you. We only need Hashem's forgiveness. It means he can't forgive you. He has no ability to. If you don't follow the program, he can't help you. So that's what Hashem was telling us. Okay. So, and this also explains why we're better off with an angel, though, because it's not that the angel would want to punish us. It would just be a natural outgrowth that he wouldn't be able to do what he was supposed to do. Whereas Hashem, if you don't listen to him, then there's punishment. And not listening to an angel is obviously much less of an issue. Okay, even though obviously the angel is speaking from Hashem. All right, so next topic, the Ramban asks, on the same thing, the story with the angel, why is it in Parshas Mishpatim that when Hashem says, I'm going to send you Jews an angel to lead you in the desert, so the Jews don't say a word, nobody complains. And then when it comes to after Chet HaEgel, so after Chet HaEgel and Parshas Kisisa, Hashem says, okay, I'm sending the Malach, and all of a sudden everybody's so upset, and the Jews are upset, and they're mourning again, Moshe Davins, please don't leave us, come with us. So the Ramban asks, what happened? How come the first time in Mishpatim when Hashem said they were coming, nobody complained? Was it, now that you did Chet HaEgel, you think you're going to profit from that? What? Why did they only complain after Chet HaEgel? So the Ramban says, he doesn't think this is a question at all. In Parshas Mishpatim, all it says is Hashem's going to send a Malach, an angel, and he's going to conquer lands for you. So the Ramban says, that doesn't mean Hashem's not going to come. It means the angel's also going to come. Just like he says, when Hashem said, I'm going to do Makas Becharis, right? It says, Ani v'lo Malach, Ani v'lo Saraf. We say it in the Haggadah, right? Hashem himself came and did Makas Becharis. And yet, it says, anyone who walked out of their house on the night of Makas Becharis, even though they did the Karban Pesach, and even though there's blood on their door, it says they would get killed, right? No one was allowed to leave their house, or else they would get killed. Why? Because it says, Kivin Shinit Nereshus Lamashkas Lachabel, Eino Mavchim Min Tzadik LaRasha. When the angel of destruction is given power to destroy, so he doesn't know the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha. So the Ran asks, the question's obvious. What do you mean? It's not an angel. It was supposed to be Hashem. There's no angels. Doesn't it say it's Anivlo Malach? Hashem himself was the one who did Makas Becharis. What do you mean the angel's going to get him? So the Ran says, that's exactly the answer. When Hashem says, I'm going to come, doesn't mean the angels aren't going to come. Just because you say someone's coming doesn't mean someone else is not coming. Hashem came. Hashem did Makas Becharis. Malachi Chabala also came with Hashem. So that's why they couldn't leave their house. The same thing, too, in Mishpatim, when it says, I'm going to send the Malach, doesn't mean Hashem's going to leave them. It means also going to Malach going to come. But in Mishpatim, in Kisisa, after Chet HaEgel, there it's a little different. There, the Pasuk says, I'm not coming with you. It's too dangerous for you. I can't be here. That's when Bnei Yisrael was upset. Okay, that's how the Ran answers that question. Again, just the Pasuk is, it says, Ki lo e'el le'bikir b'cha. That's in Pasuk, Perek, Lama Gimel, Pasuk, Gimel, where Hashem says, I'm not going to come. That's why they were upset there. Okay, but the Ran says that whole parsha in Kisisa needs a lot of explanation. Okay, and he's going to spend some time explaining it. All right. So the Pesukim say that I will not go, Ki lo e'el le'bikir b'cha, ki am k'shir fa'atah panachelcha b'derech. Hashem says, I'm not going to go with you Jews, because you're a stiff-necked nation and I might have to destroy you. Okay? So then Moshe's response to that was, seems a little strange, Moshe says, later on, Pasuk Yud Beis, he didn't tell me, first of all, who this Malach is. And then he says, by the way, can you, by the way, can you tell me your special ways, your Yidgum Midos of Rachamim, so that I can find favor in your eyes? And then, okay, so we don't know why he responded to that. Then Hashem says, Vayomer pana yelechu v'anichosi lach. Hashem says, okay, I will come with you. And then Moshe responds, if you don't come with us, don't take us out. Wait a second. Hashem just says, "Panai yelechu v'anichosi lach." Next pasuk responds. Moshe says, "Emein panecha olchim." Hashem just told you, "Panai yelechu." I will go with you. My face will go with you. And then Moshe says, "Well, if you don't, then don't take us." Why would Moshe respond that way? And then later on in Perek Lamed Aleph pasuk Tes, it says, "Vayomrim na matzasi chen mi'einecha." And that's totally ununderstandable. Hashem just said originally, I'm not going to go with you, because if I do, you might sin, and then you'll get destroyed. What does Moshe say? If I have found favor in your eyes, Hashem, please, yelech na bikir bein, yelech na Hashem bikir beinu, please go with us. Kiyam ksheirefu. What on earth is that supposed to mean? That's a reason to not go with you, right? It says, kiyam ksheirefu, because there's this explanation, therefore Hashem should come with us. So how does any of that make sense? Okay, so the Ran explains the whole thing from the beginning. Now Moshe was saying that, so he didn't know which Malach was going to be, and now he wanted to say, really, I don't need a Malach, because if you just, the whole reason you, Hashem, you want to leave us is because you say if we sin, you might have to wipe us out, Chalila. If you tell me the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim, then if ever the Jew sins, we can say the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim, and then you won't destroy them. You'll have mercy on them, you won't destroy them, and then you can come with us. So if you just tell me that you'd give me the Sarachamim, so then everything goes okay. So that's why when Moshe said, okay, you didn't tell me who this Malach is, and now please tell me you'd give me the Sarachamim. That's what he was saying. If you just tell me those had a daven to you, and to what your Yud Gimel Midos Rachamim are, which we know whenever you say that Hashem has mercy on the Jewish people, if you tell me that, everything will be okay, and you'll be able to come with us. And also, it says, Moshe says, and this is your nation, so it's much better that if you're with us, everyone knows it's your nation. So Hashem responds, Pana yelechu v'anichosilach. So the Ran says what this means is, when Hashem said, I will go with you when I am meniach you. Pana yelechu, I will go with you when I hanichosilach, when I get you to rest. What does that mean in Eretz Yisrael? Hashem is saying, I don't need to teach you the Yud Gimel Midos Rachamim. When you get to Eretz Yisrael, then I could go with you. And then you won't need the Yud Gimel Midos Rachamim. Why? So the Ran says here, because the whole reason Hashem was kaviyochel worried that if Hashem is with them in the desert, they're going to sin, and that he'd have to wipe them out, is because he was afraid of Avodah Zarah. They were likely to do Avodah Zarah, whereas when they lived in Eretz Yisrael, they were not likely to do Avodah Zarah. And therefore Hashem could go with them there. And why is it that when they're in Eretz Yisrael, they're less likely to do Avodah Zarah? The reason is because we know from Chazal that every nation has its own Malach or Sar, whatever, some celestial being in charge of it, except for Israel. Israel, Hashem himself is runs it. But the rest of the world is given over to the power of an angel. Again, not that the angel has independent thought, but they're given over to an angel that Hashem doesn't run it himself. And that's why we say, Kaladar Bechutzar, it's Ki'ilu Ein Lo Eloka. We say, someone who lives outside of Israel, it's as if they have no God. Because your tefillos, the reason is, because it's as if you have no God, because your tefillos are not heard as well, because the whole country you're in, if it's not Eretz Yisrael, is overseen by some Tsar. So that's why it's as if you have no God, because when you're in Eretz Yisrael, then Hashem is directly in charge over there, directly runs it. So that's number one. So they'll be less tempted to for Avodah Zarah in Israel. Number two is that when they're in Eretz Yisrael, obviously they're more connected to Hashem because it's a more spiritual land. And lastly, he says, in the desert, it's a dangerous place. And so if the Jews sin a little bit in the desert, so since it's a dangerous place anyway, you know, to survive in a dangerous place, you need merits to not get, you know, blown up in a normal street in the U.S. It does not require nearly as much merits as to not get blown up if you were walking in Baghdad, let's say, where terrorist bombs go off all the time. So when you're in the desert, where it's a very dangerous place, so there, if the Jews sin even a little bit, they're more likely to get wiped out. But if they go to Eretz Yisrael, so their life is more normal, and they need less merits. So if they sin, they wouldn't necessarily get wiped out. So that's why in Eretz Yisrael, there's less reason to worry, because number one, there's no Hashem is directly there. There's no other mazel that they might get think that they have to daven to. Number two, it's a holier place. And number three is that it's less dangerous in general as the place goes. Okay, to that, Moshe responds, "Imein panecha alchim, al talenu mizeh." That if that's the case, if you don't go with us, don't take us, because what Moshe was saying was, people will think then, if Hashem only goes with us when we're in Israel, people will think that it's not the Jewish nation is so special. They'll think the land of Israel is very special, but they won't think that the Jews are special, and that's why they'll think that when we were in the desert, you didn't go with us. So Hashem says, fine, because you're a motzi chen meinai, because I like you. In other words, Hashem was saying, well, I'm not convinced, I'm not going to necessarily do this because of the merits of Klal Yisrael, but because I like you, sure, fine, I'll stay with the Jews even in the desert. But that's why it only lasted while Moshe was alive. As soon as Moshe died, so Yeshua took over, so then that's why the Malach came back then, because Hashem only did it for Moshe. Moshe wanted the Jewish, his Shechina to be with, that Hashem should be with the Jews even in the desert. As soon as Moshe died and Yeshua took over, so then the Malach came back. Okay. Then Moshe says something that sounds strange. Harini das kvadecha. So of course Hashem, Moshe knew, was not under any illusions to see Hashem. There's nothing to see, it's not physical. What Moshe wanted was that the Ran explains that he wanted to understand or see in the intellectual way. Hashem is more than was humanly possible. He wanted to that, you know, we can only attain, a human can only attain a certain level because they're physical, they're in a body. And he wanted to attain the level of nevuah, of understanding of Hashem, that one can only attain post their life, after death. So that's what Moshe asked for. To which Hashem said, well, I can't do that, but I can teach you the Yud Gil Midas HaRachamim that you can use to daven for the Jewish people. And that's why Moshe re-asks later on, because Hashem's response was, I'll teach you the Yud Gil Midas V'chanosiyas Asher Achon V'richamtiyas Asher Arachim. So that means Hashem will have mercy and graciousness on those He wants to have mercy and graciousness on. So what that meant, Chazal tell us, is that Hashem says, I'll teach you these Yud Gimel Midos, and then I'll even have mercy on people who don't deserve mercy. But since that doesn't sound necessarily right, so the Pasuk writes it in Hashem said it in a different way, I'll have mercy on who I want to have mercy on. So Ran says, Moshe, therefore, for clarity, asks it again, that, in other words, to say, you should go with us and teach me the Yud Gilma Midos, and in a way that they will always be forgiven, because they need it, because they are a stiff-necked nation. In other words, please teach me you should go with us with the Yud Gilma Midos, that will always work, that the Yud Gilma Midos need to always work, that when Moshe davens to Hashem with the Yud Gimel Midos of mercy, that Hashem will forgive the Jewish people. I need that to always work because they are a stiff-necked nation. So that's why Hashem says, Hine Anochi Karez Bris. So that's why Hashem makes a bris with them, that He will always listen to the Yud Gimel Midos, they'll always be listened to, and Hashem will always save the Jewish people. Okay. So the bottom line from all this is Moshe did not want the Malach to be with them, because if the Jews would sin, they'd be lost. So Moshe wanted Hashem to go with them with the condition that there's a Yud Gimel Midos that will always work. And that's what Hashem agreed to, at least while Moshe was alive. Okay, the next thing Ran talks about is why it says Kishmi Bekirbo, that my name is in him. What did that mean? This Malach, it says Kishmi Bekirbo, my name is in him. So it means that the Jews should treat this angel that's going to come, when Hashem was saying He's going to send them, with a higher level of respect, because my name is with him, which Chazal tell us, it's this Malach Matatron, and so this Malach is on a higher level, and therefore you can treat him like me, in the sense that you can bow down to him, and treat him with higher respect, which is the only way to explain, says the Ran, how Yehoshua was able to bow down to him. Because you're not allowed to bow down to idols, and you're not allowed to bow down to spiritual entities either. There are four ways of serving Avodah Zarah that are always forbidden, and that is Zvicha, that's to offer them a carbon, Kitor, incense, Nisach, that's wine libations, or Hishtachavah, you're bowing down. So we know the story by Yehoshua, when this same Malach came, Yehoshua bowed down to him. How was Yehoshua allowed to bow down to him? Not allowed to bow down to an angel. It's Avodah Zarah. So because this was different, this you could treat this angel as if it's Hashem, because it's Shmi Bekirbo. He had this idea that Hashem's name was in him, whatever that means. We don't understand it exactly. It means this Malach was on the level you could bow down to Hashem by bowing down to it. And like the Ran points out, we never find anybody ever bowing down to an angel other than Yeshua. because he was the only angel you're allowed to bow down to, except for Bilam, and Bilam was Bilam, so that's no proof to anything. Okay, so that's how this angel was special. Fine. So the Rad explains that's why the Psukim go on in Mishpatim when Hashem told us about I'm going to send you this Malach and Shmi Bekirbo. So then the next pasuk is, by the way, almost Hashem reminds us about the Isra of Avodah Zarah. The reason why, the Ran explains, the Torah all of a sudden, after telling you I'm going to send the Malach to conquer the Goyim, he says to not worship Avodah Zarah, is because obviously there's a possibility of people getting confused over here. So he wants them to know, this is the only Malach you're allowed to bow down to, because Shmi Bekirbo, my name is in him. So if it's a higher level Malach, so for whatever reason you're allowed to treat him differently, that's only because I, Hashem, said so. But any other Malach would be Avodah Zarah, so don't worship Avodah Zarah. Okay. And then the Ran goes on to tell us how really Avodah Zarah started. And he says it had to have made some kind of sense, because so many Jews over the history of certainly Tanakh find so many people worshipping Avodah Zarah, they couldn't have all been dumb. Why were they bowing down to idols? So he says that the way Avodah Zarah started was because there are just like there are physical remedies where you could take a pill if you're sick and you get better, and that's just the reality of life. Certain chemical reactions happen because they do. There's also spiritual things that just work because they do. Segulos, let's say, like the Gemara talks about, or the Mishnah, you carry a fox's tooth around your neck, so it's a segula that it'll help you from a certain disease. So that's a spiritual type of nature. It's a spiritual reality, but it's not because you worshipped anything. It's just a segula. It works because it works. That's just like chemical reactions work. So there are spiritual things that work. So, but the thing was that since it was spiritual, people thought maybe if they bowed down to the spiritual thing that was making this work, if they offered it a karban, so then just like in the Mesa Migdash, that gets you, Hashem likes that, Kaviyocha wants it. So too, maybe if they did that to an angel, they would get more of it. So that's how Avodah Zarah started, that there were seguliostika things, and people started worshipping the powers that made that happen. And that, of course, is silly, as the Ran explained in this whole long drasha, that Malachim have no independent thought. They just follow a program. And being nice to them doesn't change anything. So that's why the Torah forbids, part of why the Torah forbids Avodah Zarah, but also why in that same pasuk in Mishpatim it says, Lo sase k'maseim, where we learn the Isser of Darchi Amori, where you're not allowed to do spiritual segulostika things that don't work. Gemara tells us, if it does work, anything that has Mishum Refuah, Inbo Mishum Darchi Amori, any even spiritual segula, not just, of course, you're allowed to take penicillin to take care of a strep throat infection, but even spiritual segulas you're allowed to do if they work, because it's just part of nature, in spiritual nature, but still nature in that sense. It's only if they don't work, if it's not proven, if it's silly, or to worship the angel that makes it work, or that sort of thing. Since both of those are silly, you can't do that. That's what the Torah forbade with Avodah Zarah and with the Darchi Amori. And finally, the last question the Ran says is, why did Hashem, if that's all true, why did Hashem forbid Kishuv? Because Kishuv does work. So what's wrong with Kishuv? Hakam Hashem says Kishuv shouldn't work. Again, there you're not worshipping any angel either. You're just, it's kind of also a spiritual reality. You're making things work. And like the Gemara says, that if you would dig out some dirt from under someone and do something with it, you'd be able to cause them harm with magic. So again, this is not trying to get some angel to like you or get some destructive angel to like you. It just works. There are spiritual forces in heaven, and if you make it that you do the right things to make it that it works on someone, then you can hurt someone with magic. So, being that it just works, it's just one of these things that work, why did Hashem forbid it? So the Rambam, as we know, says it doesn't work and it's all silly. Okay, the Ran says that that's not true, as we see from the Gemara of the Amoraim, who were like that story that I was just mentioning, where this lady, a witch, or whatever, someone who knew Kishuv, was trying to take dirt from under one of the Amoraim where he was sitting, and he didn't seem to care. He said, go ahead, take it. And they said, don't you know she's trying to do magic on you? And or the Gemara asks why he wasn't concerned. The Gemara says, well, he was a big tzaddik. So you see that it's a true thing. If he wasn't a big tzaddik, then it would have hurt him. So, why is it usher if it works? So the Ran answers that because it's a negative thing. Hashem created certain destructive forces that he uses when he needs to punish or hurt someone. Hashem doesn't want them expanded. And since Kishuf is negative, like Chazal tell us when the magicians tried to do the makos, it says Balatehem and Balahatehem sometimes. So Chazal tells us when it's Balatehem, they were using Shadim, some kind of spiritual demons. And when they said Balahatehem, they were using Kishuf, which Chazal tells us were Malachi Chabala. These were angels of destruction. So Hashem doesn't want that to increase. So therefore, that's why Hashem forbade Kishuf. And that's basically where the drasha ends. And Mirat Hashem, next week we will continue with drasha number 5.